Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's the In Their Own League podcast, and it's B here. And I've got a chock-a-block podcast with me today. I've got a lot of our little In Their Own Leaguers. We need a better name for that, but let's go with that so far. So here's some of my team, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves. So who would like to go first?
I'll go first then. I'm Kaz. I live in Edinburgh. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. So it's nice to have you here with us, Kaz. If anyone wants to know more about Kaz, then you can head over to the website, because you just submitted some of your picks for 2019, including Peanut Butter Falcon, which was one of my favorite films. So great taste there. Who else is wanting to introduce themselves? What about you, Nicole?
Yeah, my name's Nicole. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I'm super excited to be on the podcast today.
Yay!
And please excuse me, I have a bad cold, so if I sound horrible, that's why.
Yeah, it's okay, listeners. She won't catch anything, we promise. Who's next?
Hello, my name's James Kane. I'm reporting in live from Auckland here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. I'm from Chester in the UK originally.
And last but not least.
Okay. Hi, I'm Kaylin. I live just outside of Edinburgh, and I'm also stricken with cold.
Oh dear, it's catching. Nicole, what have you done?
I know.
Well, I'm happy that even if you are, both of you have illness, you've made it to join me today and go through some of our favorite films of 2019 before the world implodes. Not to be a pessimist here or anything like that. So let's get going. One of my favorite films from last year was The Wonderful Hustlers. Did anyone else catch this, and did you enjoy it as much as I did? Because I wasn't expecting much when I went into it, and I loved it. I think Jennifer Lopez is walking away with that Best Supporting statue on the Oscar night.
Yeah, I mean, I actually caught this one. It didn't make my top lists because I actually watched this on New Year's Day. I really, really enjoyed Hustlers myself. I thought it was really interesting how the structure of the film to me struck me as quite well established. I do think that the Goodfellas comparisons are somewhat deserved. Not that that's a bad thing. Goodfellas is a great movie, but I feel like they put like a really fresh spin on a lot of things, and it felt like a really fresh, energetic, fun movie.
This is one that I actually haven't caught yet, but funny enough, I have it pulled up on my computer right now on Amazon Video because I'm planning on watching it at some point this weekend, because it feels like one of those films that everyone has something good to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, for me with Hustlers, one thing that, I mean, I don't know if this is more of a guy's reaction, but I was watching it just thinking, like, if it were a group of men drugging women and stealing their money, would I feel differently about this? And, like, the film doesn't completely glorify it, but for whatever reason, I was most of, like, 80% of the time fine with it, because I really like how it is, as with several other movies from 2019 that I really enjoyed, a genuine class warfare movie. I mean, you've got Parasite, you've got Knives Out, you've got Ready or Not, and it shows how this isn't so much a men versus women movie, although that definitely kind of plays into it. Or men versus everybody else, all the other genders. But it's just like these rich scumbags who have completely pilfered not only the nation, but the world in the 2007-2008 financial crisis that just devastated so many countries and cities around the world. Like, there's almost that act of vengeance and justice about it, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a Robin Hood to it.
Yeah.
It was hard to feel sorry for the guys too much. But like you say, when you do put it in the context of they are actually being drugged and taken advantage of. So yeah, if the genders were flipped, I would be starting to think about power complexes here and like societal influences on men versus women, and how it, certain actions are different when they are performed by men and by women. But yes, that whole Robin Hood thing was a good parallel there.
Yeah, and not to spoil anything, because it does come later on to the film, but the film does challenge that. It does say, like, well, you are drugging people, and maybe not all of them deserve it.
Yeah, talking about people, well, the rich kind of getting the comeuppance, you mentioned some great films there. Ready or Not was a real surprise for me. Did anyone else catch Ready or Not, and what were you sort of expecting going into it? Because it really went places I wasn't quite expecting, and I loved it for it. And my favorite bit was the fact that she changes into Converse shoes. I mean, yes, finally, we're not having our sort of main woman running around in high heels from T-Rex monsters, but you know what I mean. And anyone else catch Ready or Not? And yeah, did you like it, or was it not really your thing?
I was surprisingly loved it. So I'm not normally one for horror, just because I don't really enjoy being actually scared by what I'm seeing on screen. So I was quite nervous going in that it would be a bit too much horror for me, but actually I came out really loving it. Like, it wasn't a complete gore fest. It had actual things to say. So yeah, a real surprise for me, that one. Yeah, I loved it.
I did find it like quite enjoyable, because I'm sort of really into that vein of movies that sort of boomed in the last few years, that are basically just the basic structure of a horror movie, but the final girl is the lead from the start and just starts fighting back at like the end of the first act, instead of that like being a like end of movie development. Like, there's been quite a few of those recently.
Yeah, and of course we had Midsommar, which came out this year, and that has a final girl moment in it. Yeah, that ending, I mean, I'm just, yeah, it's so haunting, but she looks so satisfied. I love her, like, oh, Florence, oh, you're so good. And of course we've had Us as well, so I mean, this year has been such a great year for horror films and women in horror.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, Samara Weaving and Florence Pugh were both just incredible in their films. Lupita Nyong'o was incredible twice in her film.
Yes. she's brilliant. I mean, she's so great as an actress. As you know, I wonder where she will end up on our top 25 actresses list, which will be starting very shortly.
So, who can possibly say?
She's also been getting a lot of award attention, which is really exciting, especially because that feels like it's so hard for an actor who's in a horror film to actually get recognized for their work. So fingers crossed, maybe she actually gets in at the Oscars this year.
I hope so. I mean, although she does have a bit of tough competition with, you know, ScarJo, so...
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah, because, like, Scarlett Johansson, for my own personal feelings, I mean, yeah, I'm a cishet white man, so, like, I imagine there are other people who are better qualified to talk about this, but, yeah, like, she does say some foolish things from time to time, you know, whether it's playing an Asian character or a trans character, but, you know, far from me to get into that too much. But I gotta admit, she is one of an actor. She can really act, and she was so good in Jojo Rabbit, which I believe is out in the UK now, right?
It is, yes. Yeah.
Good.
It's so good, that movie. I mean,
I love it.
It's so wonderful. Has anyone caught Jojo Rabbit here? Have we all caught Jojo Rabbit here?
I will be seeing it tomorrow.
Oh, okay. We won't give away too much, but it is really wonderful. I mean, I'm sorry. When you were talking about Scarlett Johansson, I just kept remembering she wanted to be a tree or something.
That was all I could think about.
I will never not bring that joke up.
Yeah. Or when people mention her, it's just like, oh, it's so nice just seeing an Asian actress getting work. It's like, yeah, she does kind of deserve these digs for the silly things she says. But you know what? There are people saying much, much worse these days. So it's people making worse statements makes it easier to just forget about Scarlett Johansson being foolish.
Yeah,
it does feel like this year, the movies that she's been in, you know, between her role in Endgame and then in Jojo Rabbit and then in Marriage Story, I was like, oh, right. She's not just someone who, like, makes dumb comments. She's actually an incredibly talented actress.
Who also makes dumb comments.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm not saying she doesn't, but I was there's a reason that she keeps getting work regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but she was incredible in Endgame, and that movie had like 75 leads. Yet she still found time to shine.
Yeah, and I think she's so good in Marriage Story. Both her and, I mean, my MVP of that film is Adam Driver, mm-hmm. but I think they are both so genuinely wonderful in it that, like, I wouldn't be mad if she won Best Actress.
I think she really brings so much depth to that role, and I think she could have easily been sort of shadowed by Driver, because he is amazing in that, and but when they have their scenes together, they just seem to have such a great chemistry, even though it's a film about divorce. So I love that movie. I think it's just a really great one to catch. And of course it came out on Netflix, which was, you know, not all Netflix movies are garbage. aside from The Laundromat or whatever.
My least favorite movie of the year.
I didn't care for it either, I must say.
No.
Now I have to watch it.
Kaz, I mean, you've written a couple of pieces for the 2019 roundup for the site, and I know that you love Judy and Punch.
Oh my God! It was one of those films. So as I left the cinema, I was trying to catch the eye of this other woman who was only like three people in the screening. This other woman was leaving, and I really wanted to catch her eye and just talk to somebody, anybody about it. And be like, oh my God, was that not just the most amazing film you've ever seen? Like, it was dark and it was violent and it was gritty and it was grotesque, but the satire was absolutely pinpoint, precise precision. It was on. So, you know, it's about women and violence. Obviously, being Punch and Judy is quite a violent children's show, but it does make the point about violence being passed down to children, and also the kinds of people who are the victims in society, they get cast out. Meanwhile, the perpetrators get lauded as, you know, fine, upstanding citizens. So the whole thing, I don't know, the music and the sound as well was really on point. And it was one of those films that just really got me wanting to scream to the skies, because it was so good.
I really wanted to catch it at the London Film Festival, but I didn't catch it and I'm really upset. And then it was released in one of the cinemas near me, and I think it was on for a week, and I couldn't catch any of the screenings, just like I couldn't catch any of the screenings for Honey Boy, which is really annoying.
Honey Boy, yeah, both of those had, in Edinburgh at least, they had quite small releases, and I had to go to an indie cinema and there was only a couple of screenings of them, but to bring in Honey Boy as well, that was absolutely fantastic. And Noah Jupe was, it just deserves every single Oscar going. And it's a shame that they don't tend to give Oscars to child actors. For some reason, they sort of don't really get their just desserts in award season. But he was absolutely outstanding. And that film was a therapy session for everybody involved, I think.
And of course, Noah was in Ford versus Ferrari, or Le Mans 66, as it's known here in the UK, for some strange reason. I
do know the reason, actually. I actually have that information. So according to Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo's Wittertainment show on BBC Radio 5 Live, it's because of copyright laws in the UK. However, unlike with, say, the Lego movie, the filmmakers would have had to have got Lego's approval to do that, whereas with Ford versus Ferrari or Le Mans 66, it was a case of James Mangold and the rest of the filmmakers didn't want to get Ford and Ferrari's say so. They wanted to be completely independent. So therefore, in the UK, it is Le Mans 66. Very boring reason, but yeah. There we go.
It does make it confusing when you're trying to look at reviews online and stuff when films have two different, you know, because like Zootropolis was Zootopia as well, and I never know which one it's supposed to be called.
It's weird. I mean, that's the UK for you. I mean, what can I say? were there any other films, Kaz, that you'd like to mention? I know that you did catch Alice as well, which I love as well. I don't hear enough people talking about that movie. I mean, you did such a good job with Judy and Punch. Would you mind sort of talking us through what Alice is and who Alice is?
So I saw Alice at the Edinburgh International Film Festival back in July 2019. It's a French film about a woman whose husband squanders all their money on sex workers and puts her in a very perilous position. And it's about her choices. How is she going to raise the money she needs to save her house and save her child and sort of keep afloat? But underlying that is a message about women, the choices that women make not being actual choices, you know, so they're sort of led down a path. They do what's expected of them to get by, but they're also vilified for it. So it's about another sort of financially and emotionally abusive domestic situation, but on women's hands being tied in the choices that they make, and also on sisterhood and how women are sort of forced together to support each other in these kinds of situations because society has turned its back on them. It was another one where I was just weeping through the credits and sort of drying my eyes, hoping nobody could see me, because it was such a powerful ending. And it's a situation that I know a lot of people who are in, well, not a lot of people, but I know some people who are in this similar situation, in that their ex-partner has all the control and their hands are tied. I won't give away the ending, but I was just sort of inwardly screaming at it. Yeah, a really beautiful piece of work, and I really hope that it can come onto streaming services soon or something, so that more people can see it, because it was an absolute gem.
Yeah, it's funny that I was also at the Edinburgh Film Festival. We may have met, but not known it at the time. Thank you. I mean, I love Alice as well. That's such a great film, and I do hope more people catch it. Over to your fellow Scottish writer, Caitlin, have you got any sort of, like, recommendations? What was your personal highlight of 2019?
Put on the spot now.
No pressure.
My number one film would definitely be Knives Out. I'm kind of obsessed with Rian Johnson as a filmmaker.
I know that you have a porg.
You have to bring up the porg, yeah.
I do have to bring up the porg, which you gave it a quite a cute nickname, which I'm jealous of.
Yes, his name is Rian Porgson.
Oh, it's so cute!
Oh my god! I actually have two porgs. They're named Oscar and Daisy.
Nice. I love that. I have a Porg, but I don't have a name for him. So I feel like I need to name him something. But now that Ryan Porgson's gone, I have I'm never gonna top that. Anyway, sorry. Not that I'm jealous. Moving on. your favorite film was Knives Out. What was it about Knives Out that you just love so much?
I think it probably has like the best ensemble cast of the year. Like, it really brings on just a bunch of not A-list names, but like perfectly chosen stars for the roles. And also, I love how it's a murder mystery that doesn't just start with establishing the mystery and the rest of the movie is just figuring out clues to get to the end point. Like, the very goal of the narrative, I don't want to spoil anything, but like, just the basic key question of the narrative changes several times throughout the film. It's a very good film at keeping you on your toes.
Yeah. I also really like Daniel Craig in that film. Even though his accent was a distraction to begin with. But it grows on you, though, I think.
I think it works perfectly for that kind of theatrical, Poirot-esque detective character.
And, I suspect foul play. loved it.
What about, I'm going to have to bring up Star Wars. I know that we're talking about our favorite movies, but you wrote such a great piece on Star Wars.
Kaylin. Thanks so much.
And I'm really interested because you've obviously mentioned that, I believe, what was your favorite film of the last decade?
It was Star Wars The Last Jedi.
That's so heartbreaking.
I know.
You were not happy with
No, it is my bottom film of 2019.
Ooh.
Oh no.
What about Cats?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, yes.
I want to. I'm really excited to see it.
I feel like Cats is probably a lot better than Star Wars. I haven't seen Star Wars, but I read your review and I immediately was like, nope, not going there. aside from Knives Out, was there anything else that took you by surprise or was?
Yeah, I definitely want to give a shout out to Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Because that really surprised me.
Yeah, you wrote about it as well for the site. See, I remember everything that everyone writes. That sounded creepier than I meant it to be. What was it about sort of Scary Stories to tell? It's so hard to say that, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I do love a title that's full sentence.
It just tells you what is in the film. You know, there's knives and they're out. What else do you need?
They're stories. They're scary. It is dark for most of the film. No, it just really kind of hit that sweet spot for me because I kind of like love the children's horror anthology shows like Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark, and particularly The Haunting Hour, which I think is like a lesser known, more recent one. And this is kind of like the film version of that.
Yeah. I really don't know if I can. Is it? I'm really, really worried about watching it because I saw the freaky something going down the stairs, and that kind of freaked me out because I hate the, like, it makes me think of The Exorcist, you know, like the whole crawling downstairs thing. So I'm not sure if I'm brave enough to see it, but
I think it's kind of
convinced
like,
me.
Yeah, it's like it is more under 18s appropriate, and I don't think that's necessarily an insult for horror films. I feel like teen horror is kind of derided in film quite a lot of the time, but I think this really works as like this kind of perfect campfire story film.
And I think it's good to have like horror films aimed at children, because it gets them prepared for the rest of the world, you know? Like, come on.
For the rest of their terrible lives.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you need to be ready if, like, a scarecrow comes to life and chases you. These are life lessons we all need to learn.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I grew up on Goosebumps and I'm perfectly fine. Yes.
Well, I mean, I was watching horror like adult horror movies probably a lot sooner than I should have been. I think my parents were overly generous with that. But like, we just had Christmas and Gremlins is still one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. And that's a horror movie for kids. I mean, like, say 12, 13 year olds as opposed to younger. But you look at Paranorman by Leica Studios, like Paranorman, as far as I'm concerned, is a horror movie for kids. It's just a horror movie for small children. And it's absolutely wonderful and lovely and very funny.
And talking about kids' movies, moving on to 2019, we had Frozen 2. They're back. And they're better than ever. And they have better songs. I'm sorry. To all the Frozen fans out there, the songs in Frozen 2 are better than the ones from the first film. And that's it. That's all I have to say.
I would agree with that. Like, I think, especially for me, because I'm much more of like a ballad person, the ballads in Frozen 2 are so much better. But I really love Frozen 2. It's actually one of my favorite movies of the whole year. I thought that it just really developed the characters a lot better than the first one. And it had a lot of really interesting themes and interesting things to say about, like, colonialism and really adult topics, but done in a really accessible way.
And can I just say that Lost in the Woods is such a great song.
It's such a pop.
I love that. I love it so much. I just want to sort of mention that Joan was going to join us, but couldn't make it, along with a few other people. And she's sent us a lovely recording of her discussing her favourite film of the year, which is The Farewell.
Joan Amen, I can be found on Twitter under JMAMENN, and of course that they're in their own league. My favorite film of the year has to be The Farewell, which brought back a lot of good memories of my own grandmother and my family, and I'm sure everyone who saw it said the same thing, and that's the beauty of it. This could be the story of an Italian family, a Russian family, anyone's family, because it is about an issue we all face. Inevitably, the people we love will someday leave us, and how do we deal with that? Billy wants to tell her Nini, her grandmother, the truth about her illness, and her family does not want her to know. So there's this cultural tension, but it's also generational. Billy was raised in America. Most of her family is still in China. There is this tension of a differing mindset between the two. And I think that Billy eventually realizes that her grandmother's already living her best life, doing exactly what she wants to do, and knowing that she seriously wouldn't change a thing. She's a combination of serenity and sass. And I think Billy wants to grow up and grow old to be like her. And to a certain extent, so do I.
Ah, thanks for sharing that with us, Joan. The Farewell. I mean, that's one of my favorite films of the year. I thought it was just wonderful. I really hope that Ludo Wang gets at least some sort of nomination for either, you know, best screenplay or, well, best director would be nice. But I don't know whether that's going to happen this year, but I think she's done an amazing job with The Farewell.
I absolutely love this film. I went to see it by myself, and honestly, I'm glad because I sat and cried like a baby. It's probably the number two film that I cried the most in 2019. But I really think it's such a masterpiece, and it's a really interesting film too, in the way that it portrays specifically like Asian American culture, and this experience of someone who, you know, lives in America and is returning to visit family in the country that they're originally from. And I just think it's really brilliant.
Yeah, I think it handled some of those topics so well. Just talking about like a clash of culture, but also a melding of culture together, and how do you navigate the two, the tradition versus your modern new life. that's what I really enjoyed about it as well. And I think it's great to bring that kind of topic to a mainstream audience.
Yeah, I also think it's a really great one, just in that it feels like it can kind of ease in people who maybe aren't used to seeing foreign language film, because it is like half in English, half not. And so, like, for someone who maybe wants to see more foreign films, it's a really nice place to start to kind of get you used to seeing those subtitles.
Yeah, definitely agree with that.
I definitely agree. I just want to quickly mention another film which has a woman returning to China, is the documentary One Child Nation, which is really hard going but is worth seeking out, and that with for Sama as well, which is an amazing documentary. So I do want to just mention a couple of documentaries there, because I love documentaries, them, I think.
For Sama, I had such a physical reaction to that. Like, there's a scene in it with a baby, which I won't spoil for those who haven't seen it. But I was just sort of going about doing what I was doing in the house, and that scene came on, and I just stopped, and I couldn't breathe while that scene was on, and I couldn't move, and I just had goosebumps all over my body. And in the final moment of that scene, I could suddenly breathe again. It was like the whole world cracked open, and it was an absolute life and death moment being played out on screen in front of me. And some of the shots on there, I've never seen anything like it. I'm blessed to have never seen a war zone. Never been in a war zone. So to see some of the shots that she had captured just on this little handheld camera of bombs falling, of people dying, of children grieving, and honestly, I was so impacted by it, I could actually feel it. And I really hope that is on the shortlist for, I think, Best Documentary at the Oscars. And I really hope it does well, because it's so important. And some really shocking but really important scenes in that.
Yeah.
What was the name of that film again?
I'm just making a note.
For Sama, Sama.
Yeah, I've only heard of that. That sounds incredible.
It's so good. I caught it at the Sheffield Documentary Film Festival, and I actually met her and her daughter, Sama, who is now grown up and is adorable. She's like 6, 7 now. And it was just after the film, everybody was applauding and nobody wanted to stop applauding. It was just such a wonderful moment. And they answered one of my questions, and it was I still had tears coming down my face, and I had to say, I'm sorry. I apologize for sobbing like a hysterical child, because I just couldn't stop crying throughout that movie. But
if I could give a quick shout out, because it's literally just popped into my head, I did catch a documentary at the New Zealand International Film Festival. Have any of you guys seen Shooting the Mafia?
Yes.
I haven't seen it, but I really want to.
Who was that has seen it? Was that Kaz?
It's Kaz here, yeah. So I saw
Kaz, what did you think?
Oh, I thought it was really good. So as well as being interested in film, I also do some photography, and I'm chair of a women's photography group here in Edinburgh. Plug. so for me, that melding of photography for social change and filmmaking for social change was brilliant. So this is a film where about a photographer whose name escapes me. This is a film about a photographer who
Letizia Battaglia.
Yes, Letizia Battaglia. there's a lot of syllables, and they escaped me. who used photography as a tool for social change to combat the mafia and their hold over society. But what was really striking for me was that we're so used to films about the mafia and sort of mobsters. So we've got The Irishman, and we've got Goodfellas, and we've got, The Godfather, all these kind of things. And they sort of romanticize the mafia and all these powerful men smoking big cigars and sort of ordering the murder of people. But what this film showed was the people that the mafia literally have murdered, like, their bodies are strewn on the streets in blood, and their families are wailing by the side of the road, grieving for their loved ones. And that's what this photographer was capturing, is this is the human impact of these things. And it sort of made me feel a bit guilty for having seen these films that glamorize the mafia. But then off the back of that, you've got photography for social change, and then you've got filmmaking for social change. And you've got a female filmmaker making a film highlighting the work of a female photographer, all in the of social change.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any of Kim Longinotto's, I believe she's a British documentarian, but with a name like that, she might be of Italian blood. Yeah, I don't know if I've seen any of her other films, but I thought she did a really terrific job here melding, because you had so much of the personal stuff with Letizia, like modern day, and how, like, oh, the lovers she's had throughout the years and everything like that. But yeah, I really loved how much of a human look at this conflict it was, particularly with this woman who, like, I mean, you know, early on in her career, this very young woman who was stepping out with a camera facing up against the mafia. I mean, you do see a lot of dead bodies in black and white and in glorious Technicolor. You see a lot of corpses in this film, so if that's not your cup of tea, maybe one to avoid. But yeah, I know what you mean. It really blew me away. And also, you know, it's like, nope, this is the reality of the mafia. Like, these are the people who are suffering. These people who are dying. Look at it.
And also, yeah. Inspirational as a woman, because she was the first female photographer to work for a daily paper in Italy at the time. And on her third day in the job, she was there photographing the bodies of murder victims. So as a female photographer, being so groundbreaking in that, and also she spoke briefly about her struggles of trying to get access to places, because people didn't want to let her in. But also, I felt like she sort of flew under the radar a little bit, in that people didn't suspect her of being capable of causing much harm because she was a woman.
Well, we are going to have to have a full Skype session just those two having drinks and discussing this for a couple of hours more, I think.
Yes.
I'm going to move on to a happier topic rather than mafia and dead bodies and you know, wars in Syria. Nicole, I know that a certain film, you have just been tweeting about it, you've been writing about it, and I think it's possibly your favorite film of the year. Is it Little Women?
It's actually my top film of the decade.
Wow.
Little Women, I'm just so blown away by. Little Women is one of my favorite books, and I've read it multiple times since I was a little girl. I think I was like 8 the first time I read it, maybe 7 or 8. And I'm actually in the middle of a reread right now. And so I was so excited but so nervous when they announced that Greta Gerwig was adapting it and directing it for the screen, because whenever you love a book that much, you know, it's like, oh, I'm so excited to see it. But it's also like, oh, they could mess it up so badly.
Goldfinch. Sorry.
Yep. Yep.
I'm still not over it.
But then she went and she cast my favorite actress to play Jo March, and I was like, all right. And I, you know, I got to see it and at a press screening, which was lucky because it meant that I didn't have to leave the house on Christmas Day and abandon my family for it. But I was so blown away. This is the movie that I cried the most in. I've seen it 3 times now. And second and third times, I was like, oh, well, this time I won't cry. And then I, you know, drained myself of all the fluid in my body. But it truly, it's an interesting movie in that, like, on one hand, it is so heartbreaking on multiple levels. Obviously, it deals with I'm trying to figure out, like, can you have a spoiler for a book that was published in the 1860s? but it deals with illness within a family. But it also deals a lot with the idea of the ending of childhood and kind of the mourning of that, and also with loneliness and kind of the plight of a creative person and what that can mean for the relationships and their life and topics like that. But it's also just the most warm, friendly movie. Like, I just want to live in the world of it. And it's got such an incredible cast. Saoirse Ronan, Emma Watson, Florence Pugh, again, she's having a great year. Timothy Chalamet, James Norton, Meryl Streep, Laura Dern, like, everyone in it is just so incredible. And yeah, I keep being like, yeah, it's my favorite film of 2019. I haven't seen 1917 yet, and I'm seeing that soon. But I don't think there's anything that could overtake this for me.
I really love how beautiful the film looks. The costumes are just wonderful. I want to wear everything that they wear.
Yes.
Like, even though it's like Victorian clothes and they're completely impractical, I want to wear it. Especially Jo's clothes. I love her like little outfit she wears to go to the editor. And she's got it's so cute. It's so sweet. I love how passionate you are about that movie. We need like a podcast where it's just Nicole talking about Little Women and Kaylin talk about Knives Out, and you know, Kaz and James, you could talk about Shooting the Mafia. We're just, you know, dedicate whole episodes to just you guys talking about these films on your own. You don't need me.
I would be down for that.
Yeah.
Christy has sent us her thoughts as well. So let's have a little listen to what she was impressed by in 2019.
Hi, this is Christy Strauss, contributor for In Their Own League. I'm from the state of Maine, and this has been an incredible year for film. I should preface this by saying that I wasn't able to see some of the films that you'll probably hear discussed, the downside of living in such a rural area. Even movies like Little Women I missed out, I haven't seen that yet. Knives Out, Parasite, one that I really want to see. So it's safe to say that my list could have changed depending on what I saw. But I still have three films I want to highlight, and I'd like to say one is a distinctive winner, but there isn't. They're all three very different, kind of hard to differentiate as far as what's best or even what my favorite is. They all made me feel in very specific but alternating ways, and they were all amazing visual spectacles. The first is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Quentin Tarantino has always been very inspirational in my movie-loving life, and his newest definitely doesn't disappoint. I love the sights, the sounds of the time, revisiting Hollywood, the nostalgia and warmth, combined with the amazing performances that are dramatic, wacky, funny, all wrapped into one. Leonardo DiCaprio has always been one of my favorite actors, and between him and Brad Pitt, it's hard to say who's more of a standout. And then add the real and Tarantino'd historical elements, and it's an amazing film. The next is Robert Eggers' The Lighthouse. I think he is one of the most interesting voices in horror working right now. And his newest is a full-on assault of the senses, you could say. It's not an in-your-face sort of movie, and yet it digs in. It makes it really hard to stop thinking about it. This sort of descent into insanity is one really that should not be missed, and it has terrific performances and direction. And the third is Portrait of a Lady on Fire from Celine Sciamma. This gem is definitely one that should be discovered. It's obviously very known among critics, very recognized as being one of the best, but it hasn't been distributed very well so far, so it's not always accessible to mainstream. I think it's going to be changing in the new year with the new year, but hopefully more people are aware of it and go to see it. It's just such a beautiful work of art that's insightful and stirring, heartwarming, heartbreaking, just full of emotion. Exquisite. It's all, like I said, all three made me really feel something just in very different ways, so it is hard to say which one is my favorite, and I wish I could draw on about a couple dozen more films from this year, but I'll just leave it at 2019 was stellar, so here's to the same for 2020.
Hey, that was great. Thanks for sharing that with us. So anything else that anyone wants to share? I mean, we haven't even touched upon you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Joker. Okay, we'll skip Joker. sorry.
Joker was okay.
We'll skip Joker. The Irishman.
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Oh, gosh, I love that movie so much. What were your thoughts, Kaz?
I'm curious because being British, I did not grow up with the programme that was Mr. Rogers, whatever his thing was. But I didn't think that was a problem because they set it up. It didn't feel like they were spoon-feeding us this whole backstory as to who he was and what his show was all about. It was just sort of demonstrated for us, so I got the gist of it fine. But I'm curious as to what somebody who grew up with the show would have made of the film and how that might be different to what I've understood of the man himself.
Nicole?
Yeah. I did grow up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and I think that there's a few things. I can definitely see that, like, you can totally still enjoy the film without knowing it. But I think that it really adds to your experience if you do. For example, the whole thing is structured just like an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was. So it kind of feels like you're actually watching an episode. And I think that Tom Hanks's performance is maybe more impressive if you grew up with the show, because he really manages to capture the essence of Fred Rogers and, you know, kind of the spirit of what he was doing without it ever feeling like an impersonation. And that, you know, he doesn't have the voice exactly, he doesn't have this or that, but it really feels like you can almost forget that you're not watching Mr. Rogers. And I do think that this is a really beautiful companion piece to the documentary about Mr. Rogers that came out last year. And I think that it's, if you grew up on it, it's a really beautiful tribute to the man, because it seems like, you know, everything that I know of Fred Rogers, he would have preferred to have a movie about him be centered not on him, but on someone else related to him. And that's obviously what this film does. And I just think that, like, you know, if you are familiar with the program, there are things in it that are perhaps even more impressive.
I was really struck. There's a scene which is essentially just looking into Tom Hanks's eyes for 60 seconds. And the whole cinema was like, you could hear people sniffling and crying and just for what's essentially looking into somebody's eyes for 60 seconds, that was really a powerful moment.
Yeah, I absolutely loved that. Talking about films that everybody seems to love, I mean, film Twitter won't shut up about it. Parasite, I mean, all good reason why they people love it. I mean, I don't, again, it's so hard because it's like Knives Out. We don't want to give too much away. But that, oh, Parasite, what a movie.
I was just going to say, I think it was, for me, it was somewhat a victim of its own buzz. Because yeah. I was expecting, I've seen so many amazing films this year, absolutely outstanding. And to see this one hyped up so much, I was like, this is going to blow everything else out the water. And it was great. For me, it just wasn't quite so deserving of the whole hype that it had. But, I'd be interested to see if other people felt the same.
Well, I was really lucky because, like, one advantage of living here in Auckland is it's a very Asian city. New Zealand's a very Asian country. And it's obviously very close to Southeast Asia. And I think that's why New Zealand and Australia got it. I think we got it, like, back in June. So all I knew was, like, oh, well, it's the new feature from Bong Joon-ho. Well, yeah. So I did not even know the plot or anything like that. And I absolutely loved it going in. Unfortunately, now it's gotten to the point where, like, it's one of those things where now, because like, it's become so popular, it's like Jessica, Only Child, Chicago, Illinois, and all over Twitter, and you've seen these little snippets, and I do think that's why you and I probably had quite different experiences, is because, like, I didn't even know the plot of the movie going in, or, like, any expectations, whereas, of course, for you, your brain had been bombarded with stuff for presumably months.
Yeah, I had a similar experience in that I really admire the movie. I think it's very impressive. I think it's very well made. But I wouldn't say that I loved it in the same way that a lot of people do. Mm. And I think that's because I saw it later after it had already been very hyped up. And I also watched it on a screener and not in the theater. And I wonder, too, if that kind of influenced it. But I, you know, yeah. I think it's very impressive. And if it were to go on to win a bunch of Oscars, I wouldn't be mad about it by any means. I think it's a deserving film. But I definitely struggled to connect with it. And I think that part of that was that it had been so hyped that I was like, oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah. Because like, yeah, that's, as I say, like, because I saw it back in June, I think that might be one of the, I mean, I do think it is an exquisite film, and that's why it is my favorite film of 2019. But seeing it in, seeing it months ago in a packed cinema with a predominantly Asian audience, a lot of the audience were laughing very hard at things I didn't even know were jokes. So I can only imagine that if you're Korean, you'll get even more out of this movie. But yeah, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and another film that seems to be getting a lot of hype on film Twitter, and rightly so, is A Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I mean, does anyone want to talk about this? Who's seen it here? Because I really don't want to give too much away. Again, it's kind of like a Parasite situation.
I have seen it, but I'd much rather hear, at least to begin with, the women of the group talk about it first, if possible.
Yeah. I saw it. I was lucky enough to see this in a theater at a film festival. And I think it's one of the most beautiful films of this year, easily. The cinematography in it is gorgeous. The script is gorgeous. The performances are lovely. But what really struck me about it is that it is such a female film. Mm. Obviously, a lot of it revolves around a lesbian romance. And you know, I think that we are seeing kind of a rise of lesbian period drama, which is really exciting. But aside from that, like, there are very few men even seen in the film at all. And the whole thing just feels very female driven and female focused. And I think it's really exquisitely directed. And I just think, you know, it's really beautiful and really heart-wrenching. And another one that deals in a really interesting way with looking at kind of the creative process. And it kind of re-examines this whole idea of an artist and their muse.
Yeah, and I just want to, you mentioned like there's hardly any male characters in a film. Do you know what I was thinking while I was watching it? Oh my gosh, this is so refreshing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone else have any thoughts on Portrait of a Lady on Fire?
I really liked that the subtlety of the performance with the tiniest little movement of an eyelid conveyed so much meaning. We didn't need things to be spelled out for us because it was just in somebody's expression, and it was in that sort of subtle performance that really packed a punch there. There were some quite explicit sex scenes in it, I seem to recall. I mean, perhaps not.
There was some armpit fingering, which I thought was very amusing.
I was like, I understand what this is, but I still am feeling a bit like, oh my God.
And yet it felt so pure because, like, again, without getting into spoils, but like they even have like the surrogate daughter, and you're like really invested in their relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it so much. It was, I think, my number three of the year.
Talking about, well, we've done our favorite films, but let's talk about the worst films. I mean, obviously Cats and Star Wars, but is there anything else that anyone wants to mention at all?
Obviously, I have a really burning intense hatred of The Laundromat. I hated that a lot. But also, I think one of the most disappointing films of the year for me was The Current War.
Yeah.
I didn't see that because it looked so boring.
Well, is, as someone who like loves period drama, a film about Thomas Edison should be like a really easy sell to me, especially when you put in like Tom Holland and Matthew McFadden and Nicholas Holt and all these actors that I absolutely love. And like, for me to give it like a 1.5-star rating, and I'm not joking when I say like 1 star of that is just the fact that they like put little sideburns on Tom Holland. It's pretty sad. It's like, there's the costuming's nice. And that's like the best thing I can say about it. It was just really disappointing because, like, I don't know how you make a film about Edison and you make it boring. Like, that shouldn't work. But, yeah. Yeah, it's bad.
I have a controversial worst film.
Ooh.
Which is Uncut Gems. Everybody in film Twitter is absolutely loving this, and they're talking about all the awards it's going to win. I hated it. It was just, I had no sympathy for the main character, Howard. I had no sympathy for him whatsoever. He was the architect of his own downfall, and everyone just screamed at each other for 2 hours, and nobody listened to each other, and it was just massively frustrating. And I get the point. It was that it was supposed to be a very tense film, because it, like, there was a phone ringing and someone's at the door and he's trying to negotiate a deal that's going sour and everything's happening at once. But for that to be sustained for the whole time and for me to have no sympathy whatsoever for him, I gave it like 1 star, I think.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, I was a little bit disappointed of it. I know that somebody here is not a fan of the Joker. I think a few of us here aren't a fan of the Joker. Kaylin, you seem to be not...
I don't hate it, but I do not like it.
Okay, so it's not your worst film of the year.
No, not by a long shot. I keep a ranked list of every film I've seen in the year, so like I know what my worst films of the year are. I've got them up right now.
Oh, okay. Give us a goss. Let's have it.
Well, obviously, Rise of Skywalker is my worst one of the year. I've talked about that enough already, so I'll just say it's a film with all of the coherence and narrative and production issues of 2017's Justice League, while also being the sequel to and rejection of my favorite film of all time.
Yeah. Ooh.
No. Like, but also this year we had like the triple bill of Millennium action films, which are always quite poor. We had Angel Has Fallen, The New Hellboy, and Rambo Last Blood.
Oh god, I forgot about all of those movies.
Millennium Films just keeps on churning out these action films, and they're really always quite bad.
Are Millennium Films still signed up to work with they were signed up to work with Bryan Singer on Red Sonja, weren't they? But then they actually decided to hire a woman, if I remember correctly. As opposed to a man with those allegations.
Yeah. What else? Yes, sorry, we have to add that. Don't want to get sued. What else is on your list of shame?
There is The Queen's Corgi.
Oh, gosh!
Which I actually saw.
Wow. I really feel sorry for you. Well, you're so brave.
I'm talented.
Was it as bad as I've been led to believe?
It really is, especially the opening 15 minutes where Donald Trump shows up.
Why?
He instigates the plot. It's not even like a cameo. He's a predominant character in the opening 15 minutes, and his presence is the instigator for the entire narrative.
Oh god, who decided that was a good idea for a kids' movie? That's scarier than scary stories to tell in a dog.
Oh god, yeah, it really kind of is. It's like a very unpleasant sequence.
I have my spreadsheet up as well. I keep a spreadsheet as well.
Oh,
yay, of all my scores from the year. And it looks like my lowest score was actually Between Two Ferns. I think I'd never seen the show that it was. I didn't really get what it was about. I've never heard of this thing. But in my comments, I've written that it was offensive, terrible, obnoxious. Glad I didn't stick out the 22 minutes that came after the transphobia. So, yeah. Sorry, guys.
I must admit, I don't even remember the transphobic joke, so I need to do some real self-assessment on that, because I didn't love it, but I quite enjoyed the, I like the show, and I quite enjoyed the movie, so I must look that up. Thank you.
Well, apparently that's 22 minutes from the end.
Thank you.
So fast forward to that, see what it's all about, but that was the point at which I'm turning this off, I can't even finish this.
What then else?
Have you walked out of any movies this year? For the lowest scorers?
Yeah.
Yes, mid-90s. Mid-90s wishes that it was 8th grade, I think. It was another one, like, they were just... I write little notes on them. What bigoted, entitled little they escape because they don't want to go home, but why are they such horrible racist homophobic sexist entitled oh wait, it's okay because they went to the hospital. That's a quick redemption.
Yeah, that was really like a rushed ending. It's like oh all right, okay, cool, now like, everything's fixed,
like you've done the bare minimum and now you're all really great people.
I just want to mention The Fanatic. I mean, that was a movie that came out in 2019. Can you believe that? That's it. That's all I want to mention. John Travolta, what the f*** are you doing? That is such a weird movie. And also, he then tried to... There was stuff about him being... sending out stuff for your consideration as if he's got any chance of winning best actor in such a movie. So sorry, I'm really angry about that movie because I spent so much time watching it. I mean, it felt like forever. I mean, I just thought, wow,
I know that one. Thankfully dodged a bullet there.
You've dodged a massive bullet.
All I've heard of it is that it's called The Fanatic, it stars John Travolta, it's the worst movie. That's like all I ever hear. I must look into it more.
His first line in the movie is, I need a Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap this up now. So I hope you enjoyed this discussion today. I would like to thank all of my wonderful contributors, both around the mic and those who sent in their thoughts. So I'm just going to quickly go around, and if you would like to give out your Twitter handle so people can follow you. Nicole, where can we find you?
I am at Nicole Ackman 16.
Kaylin, where can we find you?
On Twitter, you can find me at @okaylin.
And Kaz, where can we find you?
I'm at She Spoiled It.
And last but not least, James, where can we find you?
I'm at Latte Thunder, like the coffee and the weather.
Nice. Latte Thunder, that sounds like a drink from Starbucks. I'll have a soy latte thunder, please. Hold the foam. Anyway, but this isn't all about us, it's also about our faithful listeners and readers, so it'd be fantastic if you could give us some feedback, whether it's via Anchor voicemail or Twitter, which is Their League, or a review on your favorite podcast listening platform, or via a comment on our website. As ever, if you do want to support us via Patreon, then you can find all the links to these in our episode description. So until next time, thanks for listening and take care.